Today's shiur is Masechta Bava Basra, Daf Ayin Zayin. We will begin Be'ezer Hashem Yisborach on Daf Ayin Zayin, Amar Aleph, at the top of Amar Amema Hilchasa. We have been discussing in our shiurim, Kinyanim. We know in order to transfer ownership of anything, a Kinyan is required. And we've been speaking, and in our previous shiur, the Gemara introduced the concern of how do we transfer ownership in a shtar? If I have a document that says IOU document, and the question is, how is a Kenyan of such a document that I buy your receivables, how is such a Kenyan affected? And I'm a Mema, so Mema says, Hilchasop, the halacha is, Oisius Niknas B'Mesira, that all that's not needed to affect such a Kenyan is just a Kenyan Mesira. Yesterday we spoke about the need to have a shtar on top of that, and today the Gemara suggests that all that's required is just Mesira, just to do an act of Mesira. And the Gemara says, Karebi, that is the opinion of Rebbe. And there's a big machlokes Rishonim, how to learn Pshat in this Gemara. The Rashbam says that Hilchasa Oisius Niknas B'Mesira, that the halacha is like Rebbe. The Rebbe said in our previous shiur that all that's required is just Mesira, and there's no other kinyan that's required together with the Mesira, even though yesterday we learned that there's an opinion that says that by a shtar, if we're selling a document, besides just having Mesira, we also have to have another shtar accompanying it. Tosfos, however, has a very different girsa in our Gemara. And Tosfos' girsa in our Gemara is Hilchasa ein oisyois niknas b'mesira. And according to Tosfos, a Maimer is actually paskening like the Chachamim, that Mesira alone will not be sufficient, but you're going to have a shtar together with the Mesira. Amalei Rav Ashi l'Maimer. So continues the Gemara. So Rav Ashi said to a Maimer, this halacha that you just taught us, Gemara or Svara, is this something that you have as a Kabbalah from your Rabbeim, that's the halacha, or your Svara is something that you came up with your own logic? Amalei, Gemara. So he said, this is what I learned from my Rabbeim. Amar Rav Ashi, to which Rav Ashi said, Svara Namihu, that it even a svara, there's a Svara, it's logical to paskin that way. Why? So again, according to the way the Rashbam learns the Gemara, the Maimer paskened that all that you need to do a kinyan on a shtar, choiv, is Mesira. And what Rav Ashi was coming to say is that it doesn't make sense to require another shtar. Because since the shtar that we're selling, and this is always a concept the Gemara gives, the shtar itself has no inherent value. The entire value of a shtar is that it represents what that you owe somebody else money. So since it's not something that has an intrinsic value, when do you write a shtar? It's only when you're selling something that has intrinsic value. And since over here, it's not something that has intrinsic value, it doesn't make sense that you should add, that a shtar should add anything to the sale. However, Tosfos, who we just said, has the opposite gears in the Gemara. The Gemara is saying just the opposite, that the transfer of the shtar, since selling a shtar is something which is not a very significant act, it's not a very significant act because I'm not selling something that really has any value. But since I'm not selling anything that has really intrinsic value, says a Maimer, just doing Mesira alone would not be sufficient, and the Mesira has to be accompanied with a Shtar Chayv. Again, the two different approaches to how learning the Gemara. So continues the Gemara. V'loi, is that true that a shtar, again, using the Rashbam's approach to the Gemara, is that true that since it doesn't have intrinsic value, a shtar is not something that can make a kinyan. Ask the Gemara, v'amar Rabba bar Yitzchak amar Rav, shnei shtaros hein. There's two different halachas regarding selling a shtar when you sell a field. Zechu b'sodeh l'ploini. If somebody says to somebody else, I'm selling you this property with a chalipin, or what we know is called kinyan suda, that in the purposes that you should take ownership in this property on behalf of somebody, and then I'm also telling you the chisvulah is a shtar. You should write a shtar on his behalf, that he should have this shtar as a proof that I'm giving him this field. The loch is chayzeh b'shtar ve'en chayzeh b'sada. The person who gives this gift, so this person is giving a gift, not only is this person giving a gift, he's being extremely kind with the gift that he's giving, that he's going to attach a shtar to it. Of course, a shtar creates a much stronger ownership on the property. Says the Gemara, he could retract the instruction before the shtar was actually written. He can retract the instruction about writing the shtar, but he can't retract the gift. He can retract the shtar because it wasn't given yet, but he can't retract the gift because as soon as he told these people to take ownership in this property on behalf of this individual, what happens now is that there's a concept that we often discuss, and therefore they became owners of this property. They took ownership, they zoich for it on his behalf. The Rishonim ask, Taisus ask, why this shtar is really just a raya to this gift. And we're learning now that ain't a chayz besada, that he can't retract the gift. So ask the Rishonim, if he can't retract the gift, why should he be able to retract the shtar? So Taisus answers that the person who is giving the gift and also has a shtar, that what happens is whenever somebody gives up properties that he owns, it puts him into a bad place. Because now, if I give up my properties, what that means is I'm not in the strong position that I was financially before. And people are not going to want to do business with me. They're not going to want to lend me money. So that's why I could tell the Eidim, I don't want you to do something which will cause me damage. And that, and the Zochel Adam Shalem Befanav that the other person will have, cannot override that. Rabbeinu Tam says that the pshat in this Gemara is that only a gift, what's unique in our Gemara is that this person is giving a gift to the other person. So since he's giving a gift to the other person, which the other person really, whenever you get a gift, you don't have a right to demand the gift. So I'm giving you the field. So everything I'm doing is really because I'm a generous person, I'm giving a gift. And therefore, whatever I want to I can back off from the requirement of the giving the shtar. Rabbeinu Yonah explains again that we're talking here about a shtar matana, and I don't want when a shtar is going to be written. What happens, of course, is then it creates a chrayis nechasim. It creates that now all my assets are mortgaged to this transaction, which means that if somehow there's a lien on that property they just gave away, the person to whom I gave that property now will have recourse if they take it away. And because of that, the Gemara is saying, I have a right to back it up. The Rabbeinu Yonason has a whole different upshot in learning this Gemara. He's saying that I indeed gave the gift. And it is my intention with giving the gift that also a shtar. Now, what's become very clear in our Gemara is that the receiver of the shtar, the person who's receiving the property, and they're also going to get a shtar, is the beneficiary, is a very strong beneficiary of having a shtar. And my assumption was that he's going to pay for the writing of the shtar. And now it turns out that he doesn't want to pay. So I could say, yes, I instructed that a shtar should be written. But my instruction that a shtar should be written was for your benefit and under the assumption that you would pay for it. If you're not going to pay for it, then I could back out. The Ramban has a different approach. The Ramban's approach to this Gemara is that the shtar is different than everything else. That even though we just learned that if I could give a gift to somebody else, and when I give the gift to somebody else, he becomes the owner of that property, Zochel Adam Shloi Befonov. But a shtar has a special halacha. And the Torah describes a shtar as a shtar mikne. And says the Ramban, the definition of a shtar mikne is that it's written with the consent of both parties. And if you don't have the consent of both parties, then it won't be considered a valid shtar. If that's pshat in the Gemara, it's very geschmack. Of course, in the field, there's a din of Zochel Adam Shloi Befonov, and you can't back out. But here we're speaking about a special rule that applies strictly to shtaros. Continues the Gemara. Now, we started that Rav said that there are two halachas about shtaros. But, he said, if somebody said to Adam, I want you to give this field on my behalf, take ownership in the field on behalf of this individual, and I added a stipulation that I'm saying this, I'm not shetichtov l'shtar, with the stipulation that you should write him a shtar, that he should not become the owner of this property until a shtar is written. So the halacha is chayz beim shtar beim besada. The halacha is that the person could back off on both parts of the transaction. He could back off on the part of the giving of the field, and certainly on the shtar. And the way the Rishonim explain this Gemara, that this is not to be considered a regular tanai. A regular tanai is that I say something, that I'm going to sell this to you, but I attach a stipulation. Over here, it's not that there's a transaction and a stipulation, that what happens over here is that there's no transaction, the stipulation is part of the transaction. And since they are traveling together, I could, until that stipulation is fulfilled, so there's no transaction. So what we're learning in the Gemara is that once there's a transaction, I can't back out. But here what the Tanai creates is that there's no transaction without the stipulation having been fulfilled. So when I back out, I'm backing out before there was ever a stipulation. Rav Chiya bar Avinah Rav Huna, he speaks about three shtaros. And he says, shal shtar saying, there are three shtaros. Trei hadamarin, the two that we just discussed. Vidach, and third case is kadam moich v'kosuv z'shtar. If a seller prepared the shtar before the transaction should take place, that means he should have the shtar prepared. And as the Gemara Rishonim explained, normally the order is that you make a kinyan on the field, and then afterwards the buyer, as we said a few moments ago, pays the cipher to write a shtar, because that shtar will be a raya, that will be a deed, it's a proof that I own this property. But sometimes the seller is very anxious to raise funds. And since he's very anxious to raise funds, so what he does is he has the shtar already prepared. And he right away has the shtar prepared. So as soon as he'll find a buyer, he'll be able to do a transaction and have the shtar prepared so he can get the money that he's so anxious to receive. It says the Gemara, Kaisa Shnina, we find such a precedent on Daf Kuf Samach Zayin Amud Beis. The Gemara speaks about Kaisu Shtar LaMeicher. We can write a shtar on behalf of the seller. Apish Ein LaKeich Imay, even though the buyer is not there. Because the only one that can lose from the writing of the shtar is the seller. Because should he, Chas V'Shalom, lose that shtar, he's going to be in a very, very bad place. Because somebody who picks up that shtar, somebody who picks up that deed, now the property could be his, even though, of course, it doesn't belong to him. But if he wants to do that, he could do so. And says the Mishnah, Kivin Shechzik Ba Berkarka, the halacha is as soon as the buyer takes ownership of that property by making chazaka, certainly a halacha that we've learned quite extensively in this Masechta, that ownership of a property is achieved by doing an act of chazaka, and the property you buy, the halacha is Nikna Shtar Bekam Makom Shehu. The shtar, wherever it's sitting, becomes the buyer's. We continue the Mishnah that teaches the Chosim She'en L'Machrayis Metatlin, because the reason Metatlin are called the Chosim She'en L'Machrayis is because whenever Karka is sold, there's a kol, people know about that transaction, and because people are aware of that transaction, they know that there's a mortgage. If there's a mortgage in this property, they're going to know. And if you buy it, you know that you're going to be, that you're going to have to be responsible for that. But tatlin are done in a quiet way, and therefore they don't create a chrayis. But there's a new type of a kinyan, and that's called a kinyan agav. And the Mishnah is teaching us the chasim she'enam chrayis matatlin niknem im the chasim she'eshlam a chrayis bekesav shtar a chazaka. So what do we see over here? That the shtar, we can learn from here, that you could buy a shtar halva through the kinyan. So why are we saying that mila b'mila le'miknin, that you can't, that a shtar isn't valid when we're selling a shtar? Again, we're learning with the Rashbam pshat and the explanation that the Rashbam gave, that since the shtar doesn't have any inherent value, it's not something that you could sell with a shtar. Here we say we can't sell a shtar with a kinyan agav. Answers the Gemara, agav shani. Kinyan agav is a very different type of a kinyan. Because what is the definition of a kinyan agav? The definition of a kinyan agav is that I am selling you something real. I'm selling you the nechasim sheyesh l'machrayis. I'm selling you karka. And with that, the shtar travels along. So when we speak about a shtar for itself, so that isn't something that a shtar will be effective for. But here we're also selling with it the karka. And since we're selling along with it the karka, therefore it's going to be effective for the shtar as well. Damat, said the Gemara, a proof. Damat be'elay nikma b'chalipin. You can't sell a matbeya. You can't transfer ownership of money with chalipin, but you can transfer ownership of money agav ka'arug, agav naratni. So we see that kinyan agav is different. And where do we, and the Gemara brings a proof to this. Kihadra papa havalei treisa alfa zuza bechazoi. The Gemara tells us of a story where a papa had somebody who lived in bechazoi that owed him, that was holding for him a tremendous amount of money, 12,000 zuz. He wanted to send Rav Shmuel Bar Acha to take this, to collect this money on his behalf. But he was concerned that the people who won't want to give him the money, because they're going to be concerned, if I'm holding something on your behalf, that I'm held responsible for this until it actually gets to you. So now if they're going to give this money to Rav Shmuel Bar Acha, they're going to be held responsible until Rav Shmuel Bar Acha arrives and gives the money to Rav Papa. And they didn't want to take that risk. So what he did was, Akninu Nielel Rav Shmuel Bar Acha, he gave ownership of this money to Rav Shmuel Bar Acha, agav asif the basis. So what he did was he made Rav Shmuel bar Acha the owner of this obligation. How did he transfer it? What type of a kinyan? Kinyan with a kinyan agav. And now the people of Baruch Hazoi were not reluctant to give him the money because they were giving the money to the person who was the owner of the money. Since they gave the money to the person who is the owner of the money, there is no concern of that if something happens, they're going to be held responsible. And says the Gemara, Ki also nafak benar of Shmuel bar Acha took this big responsibility on himself. That means if I'm asked to bring something on behalf of someone else, so I'm doing you a favor, I'll take it for you. But here, Rav Shmuel bar Acha put himself into a much higher level of responsibility. What he did was that he became the owner of the loan, and that's why the people of Baruch Hazoi felt had no problem to give it to him. But, says the Gemara, Kiyasa, when Rav Shmuel bar Acha came back, so Rav Papa went out, Nofak Lapei HaTovach. Rav Papa went out to greet him until Tovach. The Pashup Shat in Tovach means that it was a city, and Rav Papa, in gratitude to Rav Shmuel bar Acha, went all the way to the city of Tovach to greet him. Another pshat is that Tovach was halfway. Rav Shmuel bar Acha was carrying this huge responsibility of bringing this money back to Rav Papa. And Rav Papa recognized that Rav Shmuel bar Acha took on this huge responsibility. And to make him feel less, to take off that level of responsibility, he came to him halfway and that he should no longer have this headache. But the bottom line of this Gemara, and it was a gratitude, because otherwise he would have to have traveled all the way to Chuzoi to get back his money. But the point of this Gemara is that had Rav Shmuel bar Acha, that to satisfy the people of Chuzoi, become the owner of this money, the way he became the owner of this money is with a Kinyan Agav. So we see that a Kinyan Agav does work in these type of situations. We learned in the Mishnah, Avalei Machalayas Avadim, Valayas Matzufim, Valayas Antiki. Going back to the Mishnah, and we spoke about the sale of a boat, we learned that the servants and the different parts of the boat are not included. So ask the Ramay Antiki, Amra Papa, Iska de Bagavei, if it's carrying cargo. Rashbam gives two pshatim. One pshat is that Antiki is referring to the cargo that's on the boat. And the other pshat of Antiki is that the definition of Antiki is merchandise. And the Rashbam says that in our case, of course, it means the cargo on the boat. Because if we're saying that even the cargo on the boat is not included in the sale, certainly something that's not on the boat, there's no reason to think that should be included in the sale. Continues the Mishnah Machas Ad Kroin. If somebody sells a wagon, and the question is what is or isn't included in the sale, so it says Machas Ad Kroin, like Macha as a produce. And most Mepharshim explain that the produce are the animal that lead this wagon. The Rambam has a different pshat. We're not going to learn the Gemara with the Rambam's pshat, but the Rambam's pshat is that it's the piece of wood that connects the animals to the wagon. But again, we're going to learn, like the Rashbam and most Rishonim learn, that the produce refer to the animal and the Mishnah that lead this wagon. And the Mishnah is teaching us Machar Sakaran. If you sell a Karen, like Machas a produce, the animals are not included. Machas a produce, and vice versa. If you sell the animals, like Machas a Karen, then the wagon is not included. But as we're going to learn in a few moments, this is only when they're not actually connected to each other. When they're actually connected to each other, the halacha would be very different. Machas a tzemed, if you sold the yoke that's put on top of animals, like machas a bakar, the animals are not included. Machas a bakar, if you sell the animals, like machas a tzemed, doesn't mean that the yoke that's put on top of the animals are included. The Rashbam explains why does the Mishnah use different words and examples by a tzemed and a bakar. because he explains that that was what they used to use. They used to use prados, donkeys, to lead the wagon, and for plowing, they used to use ox with the yoke. Rabbi Huda now introduces a whole new concept. He says that there's a concept of called Davim Maidim. When we don't know how to look at this situation, we look at what was the price, as the Mishnah explains. Kate said, Amalai, if a buyer tells a seller, sell me your tzemet for 200 zuz, and everybody knows, says the Mishnah, that the tzemet itself is not worth, a yoke itself is not worth that much money, then the amount that's paid is clearly a raya that I meant to sell the animal alone. The Chum Amrim and Adam Raya, the Chum say that money is not a proof. And now Al Gemara introduced a new concept, and that's the concept of Dama Maidim. We're going to learn a Gemara Mitzvah Shem on Daf Tzadik Beis Omen Aleph, where somebody bought an axe, and he found that the axe has a violent nature, and it couldn't be used for plowing, it could only be used to be slaughtered. The buyer says, I bought the axe for the purpose of plowing the field. I didn't buy this axe for slaughter, and I should get my money back. It's a mekach tos. Says Shmuel, that even if most people buy axe for plowing, this buyer is not entitled to refund unless he can prove that he bought the axe for plowing. And if he can't make that proof, he's going to lose. However, says the Gemara, that if an axe for plowing is usually more expensive than an axe that's used for slaughter, we could rely on Hadamim Maidim. If he paid the price that's usually paid for a plowing axe versus the price that's usually paid for an axe that's used for slaughter, that's a proof that that was his intention, and he could say it was a mekach tos. So all the Rishonim, many Rishonim asked the question, in our Mishnah we just learned that this concept of Dama Maidim is a machloikis Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, and the Chachamim don't agree with Dama Maidim. Why over there do they agree? So Chaim Brisker explains that the case of a violent axe, the issue is there is no question of definition. When we speak about an axe, it could be speaking about both types of axe. It could be talking about an axe that's used for plowing, an axe that's going to be there for slaughter. The machlokes between the buyer and the seller was what was the buyer's intent? What type of animal was he intending to buy? For that, Dama Maidim could prove that the buyer could successfully say, I wanted to buy an axe for plowing. In the case of our Gemara, when we're speaking about the sale of a tzemed, the our Gemara's issue is not regarding kavana. What was the buyer's intent? The question our Gemara is a question of wording. What is the definition of the word tzemed? The seller says that I don't care what your intention was. The contract says the word tzemed. So even though the purchase price can indeed indicate that he didn't just want to buy the yoke, that he wanted to buy the animals as well, it doesn't make a difference, because Dama Maidim cannot give us and tell us the definition of a word. And since Dama Maidim cannot give us the definition of a word, the Chachamim cannot agree that Dama Maidim should be included. The Chashuki Chemet discusses a shaila where somebody bought an aliyah in a shul. It was Parshas B'Shalach. Parshas B'Shalach, we read the Parshas Haman. And of course, this person firmly believed that having the aliyah Parshas Haman will help him with Panosah. And Parshas Haman is usually chamishi, a parshas b'shalach. But what the Gabbai did that week is that he added, made a sofa in the laning, and chamishi was in parshas Amon, and this person bought chamishi. He had spent a lot of money for the parshas Amon, and now when it comes for payment, he says, "Well, I bought the parshas Amon. I wasn't interested in chamishi." And he says the proof that what I'm saying should be followed is that people should, nobody spends that much money for regular chamishi. Hadamim meidim. The money should be a proof that I paid, that I bought parshas Amon, and if you ended up not giving me parshas Amon, I don't have to pay for it. So the question is, the way the Chashuk Echemet approaches this question is, we've learned before in our Masechta, we've been spending many, many dafim discussing that when somebody bought property, what is included in the sale, what is not included in the sale. And many times we've asked the question, well, Dabim Maidim, why don't we look at the price? And the price should be indicative. So we said that when we speak about real estate, there's no concept of price. Because when we speak about real estate is no, there's no real price. If that's the case, we could suggest that the same is by an aliyah. Aliyah Sefer Torah is not like a bottle of milk. And sometimes people spend more for an aliyah, people spend less, and therefore you can't use the Dabim Maidim. There's another point to this question, is that when somebody buys an aliyah, how do we look at the buying of the aliyah? Do we look at it as mekach u'memkar, or do we look at it as a neder? And if it's a neder, so when I have to fulfill my pledge, my neder, no matter what, if it's mekach u'memkar, so then the halacha of mekach u'memkar is different than where you could say mekach tos. On a neder, you can't say mekach tos. So one of the proofs that they suggest that buying an aliyah is not considered mekach u'memkar, it's considered a neder, is because we're not allowed to do mekach u'memkar on Shabbos, on Yontif. So the question is, in many shuls, they're selling aliyahs on Shabbos and Yontif. Why isn't there a problem with mekach u'memkar? But if we say that the aliyah that's being sold should not be viewed as a mekach u'memkar, it's being viewed as a neder, nidrei mitzvah may be articulated on Shabbos. So that's a proof that it's a neder. But again, it's not really a compelling proof, because even though the buying and selling of aliyah is done with a memkar, it is done with a neder, but it's a neder. It's done with a neder, but it's a neder that's done through a mekach u'memkar. And since it's a neder that's done through a mekach u'memkar, the halacha of mekach u'memkar would be applicable. And if damim meidim is something that we use for mekach, that as we're learning in our Gemara, that then the halacha should be that it should be effective here. It should be effective here as well. The Truma Sedeshin has a interesting discussion. Reuven asked Shimon to do something on his behalf, to do some sort of a shlichus on his behalf, and he told him, "I'm going to pay you a very significant fee for doing this shlichus." He does what he was told, and he comes back and he gives and he says, "You owe me what you said you would pay me for doing the shlichus, and you also owe me for travel expenses." And the person who hired him says, "Well, I paid you so much, and part of the reason I agreed to pay so much was because it's supposed to take care of the expenses as well." So the Truma Sedeshin says that, do we say Dabim Maidim? Do we say that the fact that so much was spent, is that included or not? And again, if we use the concept that we've discussed in our shiur, Dabim Maidim
can only be used in a situation where there's no question about the definition. But when Dhamma Medim is going to be used to determine what was or wasn't included, here we would say Dhamma Medim. And therefore the halacha is, says the Trumas Hadeshin, and turns out that what Rav Chaim Brisker said is really Trumas Hadeshin, that the person who sold him, the person who sent him on the Shlichus would win in that Din Torah. The Sefer Divrei Yisrael explains Damim Maidim means that we know that Chazal teach us that Anis Maver Odom Adas Koinoi. If a person doesn't have financial stability, it's hard for him to be a real Oved Hashem. Damim, if somebody, Baruch Hashem, has financial stability, Maidim, it keeps him recognizing Havoidus Hashem. Because it keeps him recognizing Havoidus Hashem, that's why it'll help him be aware of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then he gives another pshat. He says that the Gemara, Masechta Erevin, Daf Samech Ches Amud Beis, says, B'shloish Dvarim Odom Nikar, B'Kaisai, B'Kisai, U'B'Kasai. Kaisai means when he's drinking, we see who he is. B'Kisai is his money, and B'Kasai is with when he gets angry. Now, Kisai is related to the word Domim, because Domim means money, and Kasai also is related to the word Domim, because Domim also means dam, blood. And when somebody gets angry, his face turns red. So from the three things that help us know who is this individual, two of them could be used the word damim. Damim, the kisai and the kasai, which also could be called damim, maidim, could really give us an indication, maidim, they could give us really an indication who this person really is. Says the Gemara, Tani Rata, Chlifa, Bamarava Kameda Avavua, Machas a crime. If somebody sells a wagon, Machas a produce. Ask the Gemara, how could you say so? For Nan, we just learned in our Mishnah, Loy Machatanan, that it's not included. Omle, and because of that, Rav Chlifa said to him, Ismi, should I remove this Brisa from the Brises? We know a Brisa that's not an authoritative Brisa is removed. Omle Loy, don't remove it. Don't explain the brisa, as we mentioned when we learned the Mishnah, Badukumbay, where the animals are attached to the wagon. And when the animals are attached to the wagon, everybody agrees that they're included. Says the Gemara further, because, and the way the Rishonim explain, because if they're connected, it must be he was selling him one unit. And that's what people mean when they sell the selling it. Machas a tzemet le machas a bakar. Ask the Gemara. Hechi dami. What is the question and what is the case of our Mishnah? Ilayim the karl tzimda tzimda le bakar bakar. That a yoke is called a tzimda and the bakar is called animal. And the sale of the Mishnah, he said, I'm selling you a tzemet. Pshita. Tzimda summon le bakar le zavon le. It's very clear what is and what isn't included. Vel the karl le nami le bakar tzimda. Says the Gemara, if when you use the word bakar, the tzimda is what tzimda the bakar is all one unit. So kul is avonlei. So there's no question. Loi tzricha. Says the Gemara, our Mishnah speaking about ba'asra the karle le tzimda le bakar bakar. Vikanami. However, there are individuals the kari le bakar tzimda. Rabbi Yehuda savar damim medim because so much money was spent on it. It's a proof that I am from the individuals, that when I say tzemet, I mean both. Rabbanan Savri and the Rabbanan say, ain't a domim raya. So ask the Gemara, okay, the Rabbanan hold, there ain't a domim raya. But if the Rabbanan hold, ain't a domim raya, so I overpaid. Because there is no question that I paid for this more than just the tzemet's work. And why should there be for not have the halacha of Aino? And the halacha is that if you overcharged more than a sixth, then it's the whole sale is nullified. And we'll have a betel mekach. V'chit heima, to which you perhaps say, betel mekach l'rabbanan leslehu. The rabbanan hold that we never nullify a sale even when the overcharge is significant. V'loy, is that true? V'atanan, we learned in the Mishnah Masech B'Metzia daf nun vav amabeis. Rabbi Yudaimer, hamalcha sevetayra v'heima magolos. If you sell a sevetayra or an animal on magolos, no, there is no concept of a no. And the reason that there is no concept of a no is because these are things that don't have a firm price. Amrloi, le'amro elos eilu. So Chum said, only these things. Ha'avad ve'shtarah kekos, ein lehem a no. Everything else does have a no. So we have a gevaldig kasha. Not only do we have a proof from here that the Rabbanan say that when there's a serious overcharge, there is a no, but the Rabbanan are actually, that there is bitl mekach, the Rabbanan say we apply this halacha much more broadly, and they say even by behema. Says the Gemara, yes, when the Rabbanan said, my ain domen raya the diktani, when the Rabbanan said in our Mishnah that we can't use the price as indication, means that I can't claim that you have to give me the animal. But clearly, I overpaid, and therefore it's going to be a bitl mekach. Vibais ema, kiam rabbanon, that the din, when did rabbanon agree that there's a concept of a no, there's a concept of a bitl mekach, that's only in a case that b'chdei shetas toya, where it's obvious that I overpaid. And therefore, the rabbanon agreed that that is a proof that the sale is null and void. Aval, b'chdei she'en adas toya, but if it's not that obvious, loy. Because in a case where it's so obvious that it's so much more than what it's worth, so what happened here? Because we could say, Eima matoni yavlei, I meant to give a gift. And therefore, so could be said, says the Gemara in our Mishnah. One of the areas that, of course, people spend a lot of money on something that we could argue, is it really worth the price that's being paid, is a esrogim. And the question is, especially there are years where there aren't many nice esrogim. And the question was, it's a tshuva in the Shas Tshuvas, Avnei Chefetz Simen Mem Hei, somebody paid an exorbitant price for an esrog. And the question is, can't somebody quote, can somebody claim, I know. So the Beis Yitzchak, in Shas Tshuvas, Beis Yitzchak, Or Chaim Sim Kuf Yud Ches, Ois Gimel, says that something that doesn't have a firm price, you can't say, I know. Esrig is certainly something that doesn't have a firm price. And since an Esrig doesn't have a firm price, there's never going to be a claim of a no. And so too, I saw Rav Gishtetna Zatzal, the Shas Tshuvas Laris Nosson, says that there is no halacha of a no by esrogim because it doesn't have a firm price. The pasuk says that when Yaakov bought the bechayre from Esav, the pasuk says v'yimches bechrosoi. The Torah has to say that the sale was considered a valid sale. Why was the Torah saying that? Why did the Torah have to say that it's a valid sale? Because here Esav sold something which is so valuable, the Bechaira, and all he got in return was just a Nezir Adoshim. And therefore, maybe Esav could say that it was a Mekach Tos and that the sale should be nullified, to which the Torah HaKadosh says that Esav was Oyev. Esav was in a situation, explains Dor HaChaim, that he was desperate. In such circumstances, the price that he paid was the price that it's worth because he was so desperate. And therefore, the Torah had to say, because the Torah says, when concerned that Esav should not say that this sale should be nullified, says the Torah, that the Mechira is considered a valid Mechira, and Yaakov became the true owner of the Bechira.